tuned to yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Welcome to an hour of drama. Later on, we'll hear an episode of Suspense from 1958. But first, an episode of On Stage, the premiere broadcast, heard on CBS on January 1st, 1953.
Kathy and Elliot Lewis, On Stage. Kathy Lewis, Elliot Lewis, two of the most distinguished names in radio, opening tonight in their own theater, starring in a repertory of stories of their own and your choosing. Radio's foremost players in radio's foremost plays. Drama, comedy, adventure, mystery, melodrama. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Elliot Lewis.
Good evening. May I present my wife, Kathy?
Good evening.
Tonight is our opening night, and tonight is the first day of the new year, so we're going to do a comedy for you to start our new series.
Something like a spray of confetti to go with the season. A story about a young man and his wife in 1953. Nice people. Not rich, not poor. Happy with each other, you know. Nice.
So, tonight we present String Bow Tie by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. My name in the play is Gerson Hap Smith.
And I'm Laurie Hap Smith.
And we're married and we live in New York. The opening scene has to do with Laurie. She's got a seat on the 7th Avenue subway. It's New Year's Eve afternoon and she's on her way home from work. At the moment, she's upset because the seated man next to her is working the crossword puzzle and doesn't know the three-letter word for the web-footed diving bird of the Arctic Sea. Laurie knows.
Auk.
Hmm?
16 down. It's auk. A-U-K. Now extinct. It's very cold in the Arctic.
Here's the paper. You work it out.
Yes, thank you. Bye.
That's Laurie. Easy to get along with. Even on a subway where people are pretty tough to get along with. To make a point out of it, Laurie, in a way she knows, makes herself smaller so that very large woman will have ample room on the seat.
You crowded, dear?
No, not at all. Do you have a pencil?
Oh, sure. Sure, dearie. Wait, I'll find it. Somewhere. Got it here someplace in my purse. Oh, here.
Thank you. I like to work crossword puzzles on my way home.
Auk.
Thanks.
They're extinct now, dearie.
Yes, I know.
Sowie.
Which one, honey, across or down?
Up there on the advertisement.
Where?
See, the one between the termite service and the cheese crackers? Sowie.
Oh, you mean the picture of the man in the string bow tie sitting at the piano?
Schizo, a man's cologne to quicken the pulse of women. Oh, you know something?
What?
I understand perfectly the emotions of those four women seated at his feet. Oh, look at that man. Dearie.
Uh-huh.
Let me know when we get to Times Square. Yesterday I ended up in Bronx Park just staring at him. That fella's a real beauty.
You really think so, huh?
Just me? Well, you're all over town. Ladies standing around staring, admiring. Oh, no wonder. The way he sits there at the piano. Hands poised over who knows what strange melody. The grace of that fellow. The passion
He's
of...
my husband.
Down to his fingertips. Smoldering. Written all over him.
He's my husband.
Ah.
Honest.
What's his name?
Gerson.
Gerson. Gerson what?
Gerson Hapsmith.
Dearie.
What?
Let me ask you something.
No.
Sowie.
Honey, this is Times Square.
Who needs it? I've got a little shopping to do in Bronx Park.
Gerson? I'm home, Gerson.
Oh, hi.
What are you doing?
I was trying to write a slogan for the agency.
What account?
Lemke water biscuit account.
Hmm.
It's going to be tough. What rhymes with Lemke? Yeah. Come here, Laurie.
Hi.
I want to tell you something, lover.
What?
It happened again. Today.
On the subway?
Mm-hmm.
Did I have a big house?
Mobbed. Then there was a woman who sat next to me.
Blonde? Brunette?
Both.
Oh.
Honey, you're the heart beat of the subway circuit. You know what that woman said about your picture? Zowie.
You don't know the half of it.
Tell me the half of it.
Mr. Honeywell at the agency called me in and said they formed a fan club in Bronx Park.
Do me a favor, Gerson.
Sure.
Kiss me.
Anytime.
Oh. 5 million quickening pulses in New York. Gerson, you're my man.
Yeah, baby. Baby?
Mm-hmm.
You jealous?
Why should I be jealous? Just to be Mrs. Hapsmith is all I ever wanted.
Crazy the way it happened. 4 years ago, when the model didn't show up, Mr. Honeywell tapped me for the job, pulled me away from my typewriter, thrust a string bow tie in my hand.
And said, this is it, Hapsmith?
No, he didn't. He just told me to climb into the bow tie and run upstairs and sit in front of the piano. 4 years ago, and they just released it. Now my picture's in every bus and subway in New York. You know what Mr. Honeywell said to me today?
He asked you for the bow tie.
No. He said, this is it, Hapsmith. We've just landed the 9-star meat account. I want you to pose for it in mutton chop whiskers.
Oh, no, you won't. Not my Gerson, not in mutton chop.
That's what I told Mr. Honeywell. A place in an advertising agency for me is in back of a typewriter, making up slogans.
That's telling, Mr. Honeywell.
Yeah. Come on, let's get dressed, baby. New Year's Eve, Manhattan. You wear the off the shoulder.
You wear something for me, too.
What?
String bow tie.
You kidding?
I want to show you off.
Oh, you kidding?
To all of New York, the man in the string bow tie is mine.
Now, listen, baby,
But the woman behind the man who quickens the pulses is me.
No, but baby...
You just run along and slip into that bow tie.
I don't even know how to tie it. Mr. Honeywell tied it for me.
Anything Honeywell can do for you, I can do.
Mr. Honeywell.
Big deal.
You really want me to?
Please.
Baby... You don't have to say please to me.
Gerson, just go get the bow tie.
Yeah, there's a seat. Come on.
Oh, I don't know why, Gerson, just to go out on New Year's Eve. Everything is so wonderful, even a crowded subway.
I want to tell you something.
What?
Here we are, 12 feet underground.
It figures. There's two of us.
Here we are, you and I, rushing around in a subway and a crowd of people.
It's not crowded down the other end of the car, Gerson. Why did you have to pick a seat right under your picture?
Well, let me finish, will you?
Sorry.
Crowd of people, and I feel like we're alone, Laurie. Hurtling through space alone.
Pardon me, please. Could I just squeeze in here, please?
Well, here, I'll get up.
Oh, no, you don't. You just sit there. I'll squeeze in between you.
Mm-hmm.
You mind scooching over, little madam?
Mm.
There we are.
Gerson?
I'm over here, Laurie.
Mm. Mister?
Yeah?
Your skirts, though, aren't you? When you got on, I told my girlfriend Janice, their skirts are the man in the string bow tie. And Janice said to me, she said, every time you get on the subway, you start dreaming.
Oh, really?
Janice! Janice! Wave to Janice.
Yes, all right. Hi, Janice.
Young lady.
Listen, madam, you've had him since 23rd Street. Don't be a hog.
I'm going to feel silly saying it, but I'm going to say it. This man is mine.
Ha, 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 ha. Put your money where your mouth is, madam.
Ask him.
Hey, Scherzo, are you hurt?
She's my wife.
Well, if she is your wife, pray tell, who are those four girls on the advertisement who are scattered beneath your piano?
Well, they're models, that's all. Just girls.
Well, that's all I am. Honest.
Young lady.
Yes, madam.
Beat it. Blow. Go tell Janice she wants you.
Look, madam, you might be married to him and all, but I'd like to explain the facts of life to you. The minute he got up in that advertisement, he belonged to humanity. Female type. Can I fix your bow tie, Sketcher?
Yes, go right ahead.
Here's where we get off, Gerson.
No, the lady just wanted...
You belong to humanity, Gerson, and they're waiting for you up there. Let's hurry before the door slams in your face. Gerson?
Mm-hmm.
You do a stunning waltz.
4/4 is my favorite tempo.
I'm having a lovely time.
Me too.
Oh, just dancing like this. Beautiful cafe, champagne. You feel the champagne on it?
Me too.
Me too.
Uh-huh. Let's go back to the table and have some more champagne.
Mm.
I love that song.
What song?
The song the orchestra is just playing, Tennessee Waltz. Let it be our song, huh?
Yeah, all right.
Here's our table. What are you singing?
Our song.
That's not the Tennessee Waltz, baby. Our song goes like this.
Oh, my fault. Mm-hmm.
Pardon me, friend.
Yes, what is it?
You the boy that posed for that perfume man?
Give him your autograph, dear.
Yeah, sure.
Now, wait, don't bother with the pencil, friend. Just a question. Are you?
Am I what?
The buster who sits at the piano? See, I only ask because you're wearing a bow tie like him. You got a face like him. The only difference is you only got one dame and no piano.
Come here.
I'll tell you.
Yeah?
I happen to be that chap.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll tell you what chap I happen to be.
Mm-hmm.
Just put your hand in my pocket and feel. That's right. Now, take your hand out. What did you feel there?
A Smith Wesson 38, snub nose, series 1927. Hey, Laurie, you know what was in his pocket? A Smith Wesson
38. Save the check, dear, and let's leave.
Sit down, lady. I said sit down. You're him, huh, mister?
Sure.
That's all I want to know. Up, both of you.
You talk to me like that again, and I'll scream.
Well, before you do, lady, I want to tell you something. You know the Hudson Tunnel?
Sure. We take from them all the time when we go to Jersey.
Yeah, well, you know that concrete pedestal that the policeman stands on? It's just before you hit the Jersey side.
I know it very well. You remember it, Laurie?
It's my favorite.
Yeah, mine, too. That particular concrete pedestal is composed of 5 ingredients. Sand, cement, and 3 of my favorite boys. It's because they wouldn't pay any attention to me, so would you pay attention to me?
We're all ears.
Show up, both of you. Now let's go celebrate New Year's Eve, shall we? My way.
You're listening to Kathy and Elliot Lewis on stage. Tonight's play, The String Bow Tie.
Laurie?
Yes, dear.
Is he still there?
Yes, dear.
Keep walking. Come on, over to the car.
Look. Look, mister, why are you doing this to us? You want our money? What?
Keep walking.
But who are you? Why are you picking on us?
1953 is going to be a nice year, so do yourselves a favor. Live through it. All right, in the back, all of us. Come on, let's go. All right, Thomas, take us home.
Yes, sir, Mr. Bailey.
Mister?
Yeah?
It's on account of this string bow tie, huh?
It's on account of that. Hey, Buster.
Me?
Yeah. How come that when you stuck your hand in my pocket, you knew right away without looking that the gun was a Smith & Wesson 38 snub-nose series 1927?
I work in an advertising agency. I wrote a slogan for it for a catalog.
Oh, yeah? How'd it go?
Use a Smith Wesson and be sure.
Oh. You know, you just happen to be the fellow who made me switch from a Colt 45.
I hate to louse up your testimonial, but I'd like to point a few things out to you.
You're entitled.
This is a very serious offense. Kidnapping us out of a nightclub, taking us to a place or places unknown, and for such a flimsy reason. Because my husband is on a subway card.
I hate him.
Me? What'd I ever do to you?
You'll see.
Look, sir, I just happen to be a fellow named Gerson Hapsmith.
I just happen to be a fellow named William Bailey who hates you.
Where are you taking us?
We'll see.
Gerson?
What?
Say something. Make Mr. Bailey realize that he's not dealing with a cardboard personality. Make him know what's in store for him if he doesn't let us off right away.
Yeah, make me do that. Go on.
Mr. Bailey?
Yeah?
This is madness.
That's all you're going to say, Gerson? Gerson, you're my man.
Yeah. Mr. Bailey?
Yeah?
You don't think you're going to get away with this, do you? What's the big idea of holding a gun on us and marching us out of a nightclub, making us walk down the street, making us get into a long black car and driving us away? What's the big idea of that, huh? This is civilization we got going for us here, fella. There's no place in it for the primitive, the predatory emotion. You say you hate me. I don't hate you. My wife doesn't hate you, although the seed is there. You think the world's against you, don't you? Well, somewhere down the line, you've been tricked, Mr. Bailey, Bill. Disillusioned. Oh, now, look, just because I posed for an ad... Hey, I know what. I'll take off the string bow tie.
And I will break your arm.
Yeah.
Here, here, and here.
Listen, you... You...
Hoodlum, renegade, malefactor?
Hoodlum. You listen to me, you hoodlum. You leave my husband alone. It isn't his fault he's wearing that string bow tie. I made him put it on. Anything that's going to happen should happen to me, not him.
Maybe.
Maybe what?
A dame in a Hudson tunnel. Dame, that'll pose quite a problem for our concrete mixer. Wonder if he knows the recipe. This floor, people. Come on. Inside.
Oh, my.
You like it, huh?
Oh, well, you must be the greatest hoodlum of them all to be able to afford this, Mr. Bailey.
Well.
Furnished in such beautiful taste, such exquisite decor. You ought to be proud of this place.
Well, yes, I am. And I can tell you this, lady, there is never going to be another place like it.
The decorator?
Yeah.
Hudson Tunnel?
The one in the middle, yeah. Carolyn?
That you, Billy?
Yeah, it's me. Come on out here. I got something for you.
Billy, you brought him. Hi.
Me?
You're cute.
Him?
He's cute.
Carolyn.
My, he's cute.
You like him, huh?
Tell him to walk around.
Walk?
Walk? What do you mean?
Listen, you, my wife wants you to walk, so do it.
I don't understand.
I'll stick his head right in the light socket, so help me.
Wait a minute. I'll explain it to him. Gerson, honey, the man's got a gun. He's pointing it at you. He wants you to walk. You know how that bit goes. First this foot, and then that foot,
yeah.
And then before you know
it. Okay, yeah.
All right, that's enough. Come back. Well?
Cute.
You know why I brought him here, Carolyn?
Because you love me, Billy. Billy loves me.
I brought him here so that you can see in a flash this guy that you have been moping over since you saw that advertisement in the subway.
Billy's good to me. What's your name, cutie?
Gerson.
You see, Billy, I told you.
You guessed his name was Gerson?
He's cute. Gee.
Carolyn, I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
I want to prove to you, Carolyn, that this Gerson who sits in front of a piano on the Scherzo Cologne ad, he is a Gerson like any other Gerson. He's just a guy, see? He is not somebody who every morning, noon, and night, you say to me, why ain't you like him, Billy?
Well, look at him. You ain't.
I can see that the only way to have peace and quiet around here is to do what we came here to do. So get the bottle, Carolyn.
Here it is.
You ever seen a bottle of this stuff, Gerson?
Well, yeah, sure. That's Scherzo, the men's cologne that me and my bow tie and the piano are supposed to quicken pulses with. It's the large economy, sir.
Have some.
Now, look, Mr. Bailey. Gerson just dabs that stuff behind his ears. He doesn't drink it.
All right, mister. You got us up here and threw a bottle of cologne in my face. Now what do you want me to do?
See that piano?
Sure.
Play.
Sure. Then we can go?
He can't play.
You see, Carolyn can't even play.
So, goodbye to one and all.
Who says I can't play?
He plays.
Sure.
Well, that's good. That's fine. Great. I'm glad that you can so we can clear this up. Listen, Gerson. You got the bow tie, you stink of scherzo, and now you're going to play. There is just one thing. You quicken my wife's pulse, and you are dead. So go play.
Oh, my.
You like that?
Go, go.
And lady.
What?
Please note the vein of my wife's throat. There is a throb there that wasn't there before. It's been 17 years since I have seen that throb. Why, that...
Just take it easy, Mr. Bailey, really. Carolyn. Carolyn. He is good, isn't he, Carolyn?
Good.
Look at him, the way he sits there.
The way he sits there?
Fingers poised over who knows what strange melody.
Strange melody.
The talents that Gerson has.
Tell me.
All sorts of things.
Tell your husband to turn around, because I hate to give it to folks in the back.
Just one second more, Mr. Bailey. Carolyn, honey.
Yeah?
He does all sorts of things. You think his piano playing is good.
Oh, I do.
You want to hear him whistle.
Oh, my, yes. Gerson?
Just a minute. Yes, ma'am?
Whistle
what?
I don't know, anything.
Our song, Gerson.
Oh, yes, well, all right.
Oh, my.
You like that?
The Tennessee Waltz is my favorite.
That does it. You can have him.
Huh?
Don't you see? He's not for me anymore.
What do you mean?
Those two made for each other. Listen to me, Mr. Bailey. Bill.
Huh?
Why should I try to fight it? Or you?
Why don't I just kill him?
That's a good idea.
Huh?
Don't you see? It's the only way. Get him out of our lives once and for all. This man, this monster, this wrecker of homes.
Hey, Laurie.
Be quiet, you wrecker of homes.
No, hey, Laurie, now wait.
I said be quiet.
What kind of a way is that for a lady to talk to her husband?
Yeah.
This man gets his face displayed in the subway, and what happens? After 8 years, he's not mine anymore. He belongs to the world. Who needs him?
Hey, lady, that is your husband.
Yeah.
Cute.
And after 18 years, your life, what is it? Shambles. Get rid of him.
Lady.
Do it now.
Lady, he's your husband.
You'll be doing a good deed, Bill.
That is no way to talk about your husband. Now, look, I'm older than you, and I know. You hurt a fellow when you talk about him like that.
Yeah.
Poor boy.
Yeah, you're married to him, so be married to him through thick and thin.
Yeah.
It's the only way. We know, Carolyn and I.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come here and sit by me, Carolyn. Now, here, by my feet. Now, where was I?
Through thick and thin.
Yeah, through thick and thin, yeah. The years come and the years go, but it is always a pleasant thing to have by your side one's helpmate.
Dear Billy.
Move over, honey. I want to sit by his feet, too.
As one sails his ship through the great sea of life, knocked about by the storm and the strife...
Let me sit down, too. Pardon me.
You settle?
By the storm and the strife.
Knocked about by those things. When one has a friend, one reaches calm waters.
Billy.
Yeah?
I feel so sentimental.
Me too.
Play something for us, Billy, on the piano.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Gee.
Come on.
Well, all right.
He's been taking lessons for almost a month now, since your ad appeared, Gerson.
Gerson?
Mm-hmm.
Come on. and steal away softly.
Yeah, all right.
Mr. Bailey?
Yes?
Bye now. Have a happy new year.
Yeah, you too. Remember what I told you, lady.
I'll remember.
Ooh. You satisfied?
Very. I saved your life.
You almost got me killed, you and your ideas. I didn't want to wear this string bow tie.
Yes, dear. Mm-hmm. Ring for the elevator, dear.
Mm-hmm. Well, come on, Laurie. Let's go out into the world and have us a happy new year.
Can you make room for me, dearie?
Hmm? Oh, sure.
Say, don't I know you?
Oh, of course. We talked the other day. I borrowed a pencil from you to do a crossword puzzle.
I know you. You're the girl who's married to that man in the string bow tie.
That's right.
Now, whatever happened to him?
What do you mean?
He's not up there in the ad anymore. Now, there's another gent, the man standing by a fireplace with those four hounds at his feet. That man in that ad there in mutton chop whiskers. Oh, Zowie.
You like him as well as the man in the string bow tie?
Oh, better. Look at those whiskers, dear. How would you like to run your hand through them?
I have.
Huh?
He's my husband.
Him too? Oh, what did you do with the other one? Get rid of him?
New year.
Oh. Dearie, let me ask you something about the new one in the mutton chop whiskers. Zowie.
The String Bow Tie, starring Kathy and Elliot Lewis. Now, once again, Mr. and Mrs. Lewis.
We'd like to thank our good friends Sheldon Leonard and Mary Jane Croft, who came down tonight to help us start the new year and our new series by playing Mr. and Mrs. Bill Bailey.
Yes, and Martha Wentworth, the lady on the subway, Vivi Janis, who helped fix my tie, and Byron Kane, who couldn't spell awk. Now, next week, Kathy?
Well, just before we went into rehearsal today, we got a copy of next week's play, The Drunken Sailor. It was written for us by a very fine new radio writer, Richard Chandley. It's a spy story, exciting, and, well, you'll see.
Yeah, and a week after that, a comedy about a nice girl and the bum, written for us by Richard Powell.
Thank you all for listening. A very happy new year. Good night.
Good night.
The String Bow Tie was written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The theme for Kathy and Elliot Lewis on Stage was written by Ray Noble. Music for the program was composed by Fred Steiner and conducted by Lud Gluskin. Kathy and Elliot Lewis on Stage is transcribed and directed by Mr. Lewis. George Walsh speaking. And remember, John Lund, as yours truly, Johnny Dollar, brings you Colorful Mystery Friday nights on the CBS Radio Network.
On Stage, on Tuned to Yesterday, from the 1st of January, 1953, on CBS. That was the first episode in a series of 77 programs, with only a bit better than half of them that have survived from radio's golden age. The show was produced in line with the ambitions of director and co-star Elliot Lewis on the air at that time, and that was presenting the radio anthology, where characters were developed in a short time rather than a week-to-week build, as evidenced by other shows he was involved in the early to mid-1950s, like Suspense and Crime Classics. At the time of this episode, Lewis was also flexing his comedic talents on the popular Phil Harris and Alice Faye show in the role of Frank Remley. It was a peculiar spin-off character from the Jack Benny show, whose boozing and laziness as a member of Phil Harris's band, heard weekly on Jack's program, was only referenced and never actually heard. That is until Phil got his own show, making Lewis a key member of the hilarious cast. This is an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for the tale of The Long Shot, a CBS broadcast of Suspense from February 9, 1958.
Suspense. And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
The story with the surprise ending is one of the most difficult to write. Yet, the old switcheroo, as we call it in the trade, had fascinated readers for a long, long time before O. Henry virtually patented it. It's a difficult form because the switch must come logically out of the characters and their behavior, but it must come suddenly, unexpectedly, and at the very end of the story. You are about to hear a modern example, and we'll bet you all the red flags in communist China you can't guess the end. Listen. Listen then as Mr. Herbert Marshall stars in The Long Shot, which begins in exactly 1 minute from now.
Another visit with Joe and Daphne Forsythe.
Joe. Joseph.
Yeah, I'm up. Pour the coffee. I'll be right in.
Relax. It's 3 a.m.
Huh?
I said relax. It's 3 a.m.
I was relaxed. Daphne, why did you wake me up?
Well, I was just wondering what happened to our savings bonds.
You were what?
I had a dream. I dreamed you lost all of your money and all we had left were our savings bonds.
I see.
So I just wanted to make sure they were all right.
They're all right. They're with the other important papers.
You're sure?
Of course I'm sure.
Well, I just don't want anything to happen to them. Savings bonds are the most secure form of investment. Why, the whole faith and credit of the United States stand behind those bonds of ours.
Uh-huh.
So they're even better than dollars in your pocket, because the government stands behind them and protects them.
Uh-huh.
And they protect us, too, Joe. Every bond is an investment in our country, in our security and freedoms. Joe. Well, how about that? He feels so secure he went back to sleep. Good night, darling.
And now, The Long Shot, starring Herbert Marshall. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Very well then, Lieutenant. If you're ready to take it down, here is my statement. It seems a year, but I guess it's only 10 days since I was sitting in the lobby of the Astor Hotel in New York with 28 cents in my pocket. It had been a dreadful season at the track. So there I was, stony. Somebody had discarded the afternoon paper, and I picked it up. It was folded to the classified section, and my eyes fell upon a most intriguing ad in the Help Wanted column. Englishman will pay $150 and expenses to fellow countrymen, preferably Londoner, in return for services as driver and traveling companion on automobile trip to San Francisco. This was the answer to all my problems. And a quarter hour later, I presented myself at the door of my unwitting benefactor's quarters.
Yes?
I've come about your advertisement.
Oh, yes. Step inside, please.
Thank you.
You have a chair.
Thank you.
You're English, I presume?
Yes, indeed.
A Londoner, I hope.
Born and bred.
Well, I must say, that's a relief. I've been plagued with applicants all day, not a Londoner in the lot. You see, the old town's sort of a fetish with me. A man can't really consider himself civilized unless he's a Londoner.
Quite.
You say you were born there?
Oh, yes, in Vigo Street, just off St. James's Square, August 18th, 1910. Know the town like the inside of my hat.
Vigo Street? I'm not sure that I know it.
It turns right off Sackville Street and runs some little way before it reaches Regent Street.
Oh, yes. I place it now. Well, you seem to be the genuine article. Tell me, why are you interested in going to San Francisco?
You know anything about horse racing, Mr.?
No, I'm sorry. My name is Hendricks, Walker Hendricks.
Mine's Kelly Raymond.
Well, how do you do, Mr. Raymond? No, I can't say that I do particularly. Been to Epsom Downs on a few occasions.
I see. Well, I've become rather fond of the horses. I might even say financially dependent on them. And with Bay Meadows opening shortly?
Bay Meadows?
There's a race course near San Francisco.
Oh, I see. Well, you have business that takes you to San Francisco, and so have I. But I just couldn't face making the trip alone, or even worse, with an American. That's why I advertised. Well, what a stroke of luck to find you. Not only a fellow countryman, but a fellow Londoner. Excuse me. Hello? Oh, yes. Well, I'm dreadfully sorry, but I just hired a man.
I was sitting pretty. The only thing I was afraid of was death from sheer boredom, because from the moment we started out, all Mr. Hendricks talked about was London.
Have you spent much time in Soho, Raymond?
I never lived there, if that's what you mean.
No. I mean the restaurants and so on. Do you know them?
You see now, there's the Moroccan... No, what was it? Oh, the Algerian cafe in Dean Street, isn't it?
Quite right, the Algerian in Dean Street.
A big French woman ran it. We used to call her Madame Couscous.
Quite. As a matter of fact, I saw her there only a short time ago.
Seems to be she died a few years back.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you probably met her daughter.
Yes, no doubt. But there's a sign. Cleveland, 38 miles.
Spend the night there, I expect.
Good idea. Now, let's see, where were we? Oh, yes, we were talking about Soho.
Yes, we were talking about Soho, and we continued to talk about it the rest of the way to Cleveland and most of the night in the hotel room. I began to think the man doubted my authenticity and was trying to trip me up. Next day, we covered Whitechapel, Fleet Street, Bloomsbury, Mayfair. He still hadn't stuck me, but I was beginning to feel like a well-thumbed Baedeker's guide by the time we reached Chicago. As soon as we checked into our hotel room, I tried to get away from him for a while. Say, Mr. Hendricks, I wonder if I might have a small advance on my salary.
Well, I suppose so.
It's still rather early, and I thought I might look over the Windy City.
Yes, of course, Raymond. Here, let me open my valise. Now, this infernal lock is always acting up. Ah, there we are. 20 be enough.
Fine, thanks.
Look here, I believe I'll join you. Stretch the legs a bit, eh?
There was a horse-choking wad of bills in that valise, but I was so burned at him tagging along, I didn't give it a thought then. My favorite joint was just around the corner from the hotel, a hangout for touts and bookies. But I didn't see anybody I knew at first. We had a club sandwich, and at Mr. Hendricks' request, I was expounding scholastically on the difference between Chicago and London bacon when...
Kelly!
Tommy!
Good to see you, Kelly.
I thought you were in Miami.
Leave in a couple of days. How about coming along?
I can't. I'm on my way to San Francisco. Oh, this is Mr. Hendricks. Tommy DeWitt.
How are you?
How do you do?
Listen, Kelly, I got to talk to you. I got a big deal cooking.
I'm afraid
You don't mind excusing us for a minute, do you, Mr. Hendricks?
No. Go on, please.
Look, Kelly, I'll get right to the point. We bought us some jockeys.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming up next week at Hialeah. 500 will get you 10 grand on the parlay.
But I've got to drive that stiff to San Francisco.
What if you just walked out?
Yeah, I suppose I could. But where do I get 500?
Has he got any money?
No, I don't. Wait a minute. That valise.
Huh?
You're sure this can't lose?
I'm positive.
All right, listen. You go back to the booth and keep Hendricks busy for a few minutes. Tell him I have to make a phone call or something. I'll meet you at the IC station in half an hour. I slipped out through the kitchen, and in 2 minutes I was back in our room at the hotel. There was the valise, just as he'd left it. And to make things even easier, the faulty catch wasn't locked. There were $680 in $20 bills in the wallet and a sheaf of legal-looking documents in the portfolio next to it. I glanced at them idly as I pocketed the money. On top was a letter from a law firm in San Francisco. It was dated 2 months ago and addressed to Hendricks in Bedford Park, London. It said, "Since you are completely unknown personally to either relatives or legal counsel in the United States, it has been necessary to establish proof of your right to your uncle's estate entirely by documentary evidence, and we are happy to state that such proof is now thoroughly established. We ask that you present yourself at your earliest convenience at our San Francisco law offices so that final disposition of the estate may be accomplished. Birth certificate, affidavits from friends, notarized statement from the Department of Records, a sheaf of letters." It was a long shot. A long shot that would pay off at least $100,000. Everything. Every affidavit and statement was a guarantee of Walker Hendricks, the bearer. And to tie it up tighter, one of the letters said pictures wouldn't be necessary, just a passport. And I knew a place in San Francisco that made passports to order. A long shot. But did you ever see odds like that?
In a moment, we we continue with the second act of Suspense.
Memo on medals. Information about our military awards and decorations. The highly honored Legion of Merit is a five-pointed white star of heraldic form bordered by purple-red enamel. In the center of this beautiful decoration is a constellation of 13 white stars on a blue field, breaking through a gold circle of clouds. Backing the star is a green enamel laurel wreath, interlaced with crossed war arrows in gold pointing outward. The ribbon is purple-red, edged with white. The Legion of Merit can be awarded to any personnel of the Armed Forces of the United States and of the Government of the Philippines, and to personnel of the Armed Forces of friendly nations who have distinguished themselves by exceptionally meritorious conduct in the performance of outstanding services. When awarded to the military of other countries, the Legion of Merit is divided into four ranks: Chief Commander, Commander, Officer, and Legionnaire, depending upon the degree of the service we honor. Since its creation by Act of Congress in 1942, the Legion of Merit has become a highly honored symbol of our nation's acknowledgement of the bravery and dedication of free men.
And now, starring Herbert Marshall, Act Two of The Long Shot.
Yes, it was a long shot. Anyway, I put the papers and the money back in the valise and called Tommy DeWitt. Told him the Hialeah deal was off, but there wasn't any money in the room. And the next morning, Hendricks and I left Chicago westbound on Route 30, and old London town rode with us.
You were saying you know the George Inn, Raymond?
Yeah, but it's not in London proper. It's in Southwark, on the other side of the river.
Oh, I believe you're right at that. Rare old inn, the George, with its posting yard.
I did a lot of thinking during those long, dull miles across the plains. In Omaha, it had looked like a cinch, but by the time we hit Cheyenne, I began to waver a little. And when we rolled into Salt Lake City, I was almost ready to give up the whole idea. It was too cut and dried. Too easy for a long shot. Almost like a trap someone set for me with $100,000 as the bait. And once I went for it, there'd be no turning back. It was a good gamble. But the stakes were too high, and there was no way of telling what the payoff would be without tossing everything on the line. That's what I was thinking at about 6 o'clock last Wednesday night when we pulled up in front of the Wasatch Hotel in Salt Lake.
By Jove, I'll be glad to wash up. That prairie country is appalling.
It's good to have some trees for a change.
Yeah, pretty town, Salt Lake. You have an aunt here, you know.
How long since you've seen her?
Well, I've never seen her. I don't intend to. She's a sister of my mother's, Marguerite Stoddard. Thoroughly Americanized, I understand, and probably a frightful bore.
Probably. Yeah, it was. Just as if I'd asked for it. A way of telling about that payoff ahead of time. A laboratory test right there in Salt Lake City with nothing to lose if it didn't work out. I got away from Hendricks after dinner, found Marguerite Stollett's address in the phone book, and took a cab out to her house.
Yes?
Oh, good evening. Are you Mrs. Marguerite Stoddard?
Yes.
I'm Walker Hendricks.
Walker? I just can't believe it. Come in, come in. Please make yourself comfortable.
Thank you.
Well, you're a pleasant surprise, Walker.
I suppose I am, Aunt... I may call you Aunt Marguerite, mayn't I?
Of course you may. Well, I expected you to be a little more like,
Like who?
Perhaps I'd better not mention it.
Oh, please do. I think we should discuss everything, don't you?
Of course I do. You'll never know how much your Uncle Gerald regretted what he did.
You mean the will?
No, long before that. Your mother never told you, I suppose?
No, she never mentioned her family.
I don't suppose she would. After all, she loved your father, and your Uncle Gerald hated him.
And so Uncle Gerald forced her to leave home?
Yes. I know Gerald would have been the last to admit it. But I've always felt the will was his stubborn way of making it up to her.
Perhaps.
Well, I'm sure of it. But at least you will benefit, Walker, now that there's nothing any of us can do for your poor mother.
If there was any doubt in my mind, it disappeared then and there. The American branch of the family knew absolutely nothing of Cecily Hendricks from the time she left home until her brother, Gerald, died, leaving her $100,000. At that point, they made a pretty thorough search, found both she and her husband had died in England, and their son, Walker, was the only heir. Everything I needed, was back in the hotel in that valise. It's 521 miles from Salt Lake to Reno, but I convinced Hendricks we could make it in one jump. I had a special reason. We had to hit the desolate section of Central Nevada about midnight. When you get right down to it, killing a man is a pretty tough job, even when it's as perfect as this was going to be. For once, I was thankful for London. It gave us something to talk about, and there was so much in my mind that I might have given myself away in silence. So I prattled on like a phonograph.
Oh, yeah, good old Wapping.
Yes, yes, Wapping. There's a lovely pub there called the Prospect at Whitby.
Oh, don't believe I know it.
No, I'm not surprised. It's an amazing thing about London. It seems that the greenest tourist knows more about it than the Londoners themselves.
Well, I'd say you've done rather well.
Well, mainly because I've been on my own since I was 14. Now you take yourself, for example. 10 to 1, you've never been in Petticoat Lane. Perfectly marvelous place. Regular Oriental bazaar, right in the heart of the city. Booths and peddlers selling every kind of junk you can imagine. At midnight, we were somewhere between Winnemucca and Reno, passing through some barren hills. I knew the time had come, and my hands began to shake so much I had to grab the wheel with both of them. I felt beneath the cushion where I'd put the wrench. It was still there. Finally, I held my breath and pulled over on the shoulder.
I say, what are you stopping for?
Look, over there, the moonlight on that cliff.
Oh, I say, yes, that is lovely.
It was all over. Never knew what hit him. I turned out the lights and pulled the body out on the right-hand side. We hadn't passed a car for an hour, so I wasn't worried much about being seen. He was pretty heavy, but I managed to carry him over my shoulder. About a quarter of a mile from the road, I found a small cave at one side of the ravine. I shoved the body in and rolled a large rock over the opening. It started a small landslide which completely covered the hole. No one could possibly find it. I had just about gotten back to the road when I saw something that stopped me dead in my tracks. There, behind my car, was another one with a seal on the door. The seal of the state of Nevada. Nobody was in the patrol car. The officer must be wandering around looking for me. I lifted the hood of my car and knocked the battery cable off one of the terminals. Then I waited and waited while the coyotes jeered at me from the hills. At last he appeared from the other side of the highway.
Hi there. What's trouble?
Oh, I don't know, officer. She just went dead on me. I was having a look up the road when you arrived.
Say she went dead on you?
Yep. The lights went out, motor just died.
Been under the hood?
Wouldn't do much good, I'm afraid. I'm pretty green at that sort of thing.
Well, let me have a look at it.
Would you please?
See, yeah, your battery cable's jarred loose, mister. You got a wrench?
Yeah, here.
Yeah, thank you. Twist this. There you are. Yeah, try it now.
That looked pretty simple.
Yeah, it was.
Ah, there she goes. Thanks ever so much.
It's okay. Let's see, your name's Hendricks, huh?
Yes.
Checked your registration slip. You're a long way from home.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, that's right. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome, sir. Good night.
Well, there it is, Lieutenant. It was a long shot. It was a sure thing until I found you waiting for me in the attorney's office. Even then, I'd have gotten away with it if you hadn't told me that the body had been found. Well, aren't you going to say something? Don't you still think I could have carried it off, Lieutenant?
Well, Raymond, we arrested you for the murder of Walker Hendricks.
but it appears we were wrong.
Huh? What are you talking about?
It was a long shot, Raymond. And it was almost a sure thing. Maybe that's why both of you gambled on it.
What do you mean, both of us?
You and that guy you bumped off in Nevada.
That guy? Well, that was Hendricks.
Oh, Hendricks was murdered, all right. But you didn't do it.
What?
You see, he beat you to it, Raymond.
Who beat me?
Your traveling companion. He wasn't Hendricks. He was an out-of-work actor. He wasn't even an Englishman. That was why he was pumping you so much about London. He was, what do actors call it? Getting up in his part?
What are you talking about? I thought you found Hendricks' body in Nevada.
We haven't found a body in Nevada yet. But one thing's sure. Hendricks was never in Nevada. Poor guy never left New York. The New York police turned up the real Hendricks in the East River the day after you left town, chauffeuring for the guy who killed him.
Suspense. In which Herbert Marshall starred in William N. Robeson's production of The Long Shot by Harold Swanton.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 9th of February, 1958 on CBS, bringing the curtain down on this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's golden age. And until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. It's been a pleasure.